welcome to Joy of Cubing. I am your host, Matt Cranstuber. Today I am joined by good friend and cube aficionado, Eric Klug. Eric, how's it going, man?
It's going good. How are you?
Things are going good, man. Just enjoying the Labor Day weekend. You do anything fun?
I stayed at home and relaxed, which was fun.
Stayed at home, relaxed, in the true Labor Day weekend fashion. It's not like Memorial Day where you have, like, big cookouts and stuff. Everybody's pretty toast. It's like school starts back up and, you know, the pools start to, and then it's when the pools start to shut down and it's like summer ends. It's not really appropriate for the show because this is going to be sort of a, we'll call it a hodgepodge show. You know, every summer is usually really packed with really fun events. And I want to talk specifically about your cube that you built, the zombie cube. And then there's a few other cubes that we got to see. One that was particularly interesting was from Andrew, I think his name's Cite. It's a very old, everything's 1994 and earlier cube. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that and just some variant lists. And then we have some mailbag items. But let's kick it off, man. So tell everybody, what's this zombie cube? I think we briefly talked about it when I had you on the show the last time.
Yeah. I will go back to the beginning. So I think 2 or 3 years ago, I came up with the idea for the zombie cube. And it just popped into my head one morning. So I was like, I wanted to make a cube that was kind of flavor driven, and it was supposed to emulate the zombie apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of jumped in. I built this cube. It was very black heavy, as you might imagine, but it also had like a white centric resistance side to it.
Mm-hmm.
And got a list together, put it together. I mean, one of my main motivators were all the cards were fairly cheap. You know, it wasn't as powerful as like your standard rare cube.
Right.
Did a couple drafts and it was really fun. But, when you have sort of like niche, I don't want to say gimmick cubes, but you know what I mean? Like niche cube ideas, they're not like, I don't know. I had my common and uncommon cube at the time. So mm-hmm. I just wanted to focus on that. So I ended up taking it apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then Innistrad block came out.
Yeah. Right.
And I was like, my mind was blown. I was like, I can't believe that this block came out like 6 months after I took apart the zombie cube. This is the perfect block for this cube.
Yeah.
And I kind of left it at that. And I guess 2 or 3 months ago, I was bored. I had a bunch of SCG credit that someone had traded me. And I was like, let's rebuild the zombie cube. And this time I had, you know, access to all of Innistrad block. Mm-hmm. And it's the same idea. It's a cube that emulates the zombie apocalypse.
Okay, so let's dig into that a little bit. I remember when you first broadcasted this, it was at like an Ohio PTQ,
yeah,
if I recall correctly. And I remember there being a lot of cards that, from a flavor perspective, you know, you like look at the card and think like, well, what does this have to do with zombies? And then like you look at the art or something, you're like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Or even things like when you think about blue cards, you know, to add, I remember there, Rashad and Airship and you kind of like giving the narrative that, you know, you have these people that are maybe trying to escape or trying to find refuge from the zombie apocalypse. And so, yeah, you know, the humans and elves and everybody are kind of getting on the airship and trying
they're the helicopters of the magic world, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good way to put it. And, so I liked the idea. I mean, I like sort of niche cubes in general because, you know, you have like a totally different design constraint. And so your constraint is really interesting in that, you know, first and foremost, it has to be flavorful. So, you know, if you wanted to put a bounce spell in there, it has to like make sense from a flavor perspective. You wouldn't just say, okay, well, let's put, you know, Chain of Vapor because, you know, maybe right, that's more based on, you know, spirits, or, you know, the art has this depicting, you know, a guy holding a jug and it's falling apart or something, and it doesn't make sense. Whereas maybe something like Capsize,
right, it's like a crashing ship, makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. So I like that. So talk to me about when you decided to go back in and revamp it. I know you wrote an article that you have over at Gathering Magic, and of course I'll link to that in the show notes, but talk about some of your logic, or maybe even talk about some of the points that you made in the article to, you know, sort of redesign this thing.
Yeah, sure. I think first of all, like, after, you know, having 2 years of cubing with my common uncommon cube, I'm just a much better builder now. Mm. So the first time I built a zombie cube, I think it was like a good starting point. But this draft, like, I've really brought all of my knowledge and experience of cubing from the past couple of years to it. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's a lot tighter now, a lot more balanced. I fiddled a lot with the numbers. The cube is 360 cards.
Mm-hmm.
It's 110 black cards. So close to a third of the cube is black. You know, not surprising.
Compared to red, green, and blue, which have 30.
Yeah, red, green, and blue have 30 cards, and then white has 85.
Mm-hmm.
I started basically with the original list, and then just kind of went through it and saw what was working, what wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really started mining Innistrad block, which I haven't counted how many Innistrad block cards are in the cube, but I would imagine that a quarter of the cube is Innistrad block.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's pretty much it. Once I got a list down, I did a bunch of drafts, and within 2 months, I had changed 114 cards from my initial draft. So yeah. I've been tuning it quite a bit, and I feel like a lot more passionate about the project
right.
this time around, just because I have a lot more cards to work with, and yeah. I mean, I feel like also my common uncommon list is at a point where not a lot of cards get changed over. Like, I add 2 or 3 cards every time a set comes out. But other than that, I feel like the list is pretty much, like, done.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, the zombie cube is this new challenge. And that's what I tell everyone who's, like, building a cube, is building and tuning your list is half the fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so great about owning a new cube now, is that I get to kind of fiddle with it in my off hours.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's something really great about taking something that, you know, even something like your common uncommon list, and finding a way to give it some new life, right? So maybe you change the power level, or, you know, you introduce a new mechanic mm-hmm. that wasn't in there before. I remember last Gen Con, you had put a bunch of Storm cards in.
Yep.
You know, and I think that especially for, you know, lists like this, where, you know, once you have like a really well-tuned cube like this, it's a lot harder to introduce, I think, new mechanics in the same way it is into a regular cube. I'll give a little bit of context there. So for things like the artifact and the combo cube, I felt like once I built it, there were like much less interchangeable slots. You know, where like a new set comes out, maybe I get one card for the combo cube if I'm lucky,
mm-hmm.
Just because that's kind of the nature of it. So it was a lot more fun, I think, to just build it initially and try to track those cards down that had never been put in any cube, right? So you don't just get to go scour a message board or articles and find cards. Like, you actually have to, like, in your case, you have to look at a lot of art.
Right. I mean, that's what actually what I was, you just hit the nail on the head for what I was just thinking, is that that's the great thing about these niche cubes also, is that the cards are completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're right. I had to, like, go through Gatherer. I did a lot of name searches, like searching kind of words that evoked zombie flavor, weren't necessarily zombies. Like, I looked for all the cards that had dead in them.
Mm-hmm.
Or I had looked for all the cards that had sickness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all these things that, and, you know, I end up with cards like Death Spark, which were, you know, that's just like a normal removal spell, but it's very fitting for the zombie cube.
Yeah, absolutely. So something that, you know, I noticed when we first played the list is that there were a couple cards. Well, actually, no, let me take a step back, because you actually revamped the way you actually play the cube. So do you want to talk quickly about how you actually do a draft with it? Because it's very, very interesting.
Sure. So like one of the problems when I first built the cube was that I just kind of drafted it like a normal cube. So you would have zombie on zombie matches, and you would have decks that had zombie and human cards in it. And that wasn't really the feeling that I wanted to get out of the cube. So it's something that I just kind of sat down. I actually was just having lunch one day, and I was at the beginning of lunch, I was just going to be like, I'm going to figure out how to make sure that this has like a very human versus zombie feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems really simple now. I just made teams. So it's a team format cube where one side of the draft is human players and the other half is zombie players. And you can draft whatever cards you want, but when it comes to deck building, human players can't play zombie cards,
mm-hmm.
and zombie players can't play human cards, mm-hmm. creature cards. So it actually works out perfectly, because the human decks are always white X and the zombie decks are always black X, and you always have zombie versus human matches, basically.
Right.
Yeah, right. It's a really simple solution. It doesn't really, it's not a lot of rules to remember, you know. You just have to remember, like, hey, I can't play human cards in my deck. I can't play zombie cards in my deck.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and the nature of the team draft is you have people to keep you honest. And it's also kind of cool, because your seats are basically predetermined. And I kind of like, in the team draft dynamic, I like the idea of doing teams ahead of time and also doing teams afterward, because there's sort of different ways to draft.
Mm-hmm.
The idea in a team draft is that if you open an upheaval and you're in mono red, and, you know, the next best card in the pack is, like, you know, an Ember Hauler.
Mm-hmm.
But you know the person to your left is on the other team and they're in blue, you just take the upheaval, because you're basically saving the team from having to play against upheaval three rounds. And so you're definitely going to increase your chance of winning. So I like, you know, the pre-seeded teams sort of adds an interesting spin to the dynamic, because, you know, maybe I open a pack and there's a very good, you know, zombie card, but there's an undead slayer in the pack. You know, that's obviously going to be very good against the rest of my team. So being able to snag the Undead Slayer, definitely is a good option to kind of help the rest of your team out. So,
yeah, definitely. And I mean, the added benefit is that team draft has always been a part of Cube. You know, we always sort of split into teams, or at least most of the time, just because there's this camaraderie when you have a team format.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that added fun to the cube. Even if you're not playing for anything, just play teams. It's fun.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably my favorite part about cubing in general, is the social part. In fact, I was just lamenting to you before the show that I had a fairly miserable weekend playing Magic Online, even when I was winning. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a testament to why I love cubes so much, because I love Cube for the people and the interactions and the blowouts and the craziness that goes along with it. And for all those same reasons, I dislike playing, you know, sanctioned Magic and, you know, Magic Online, which is kind of interesting. I don't know, maybe I'm getting old, or maybe it's just a testament to how good this format is. But I find myself becoming much more disenfranchised with constructed Magic these days, and being much more interested in Cube and just draft formats in general. I'll never probably lose my fire for drafting any block set, because I think WotC really has a really, really good idea of how to design limited sets. But yeah, man, I think I'm tapped out until at least Innistrad rotates, because, man, this format's rough.
It's a little bit of both, I'm sure. You know, the format is good, and we're
We're old men now.
Yeah.
That's something I was thinking about coming out of Gen Con, was that this year I got the most sleep I have ever had at Gen Con. And no one ever really complains about getting enough sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it was kind of like, man, what a bummer. Like, I'm getting a little too old for this. But yeah, I got plenty of cubing in too, so that was good.
So let's talk a little bit about Gen Con. I guess before I move on, do you have any closing thoughts on the Zombie Cube?
I would just say that, like, I've already written two articles about it on GatheringMagic.com, which I guess is where this podcast is going to be hosted. So yes, you're sir. There. So yeah, just go read the articles. I'll probably write some articles in the future when I have gathered enough information to write an article. And just check them out. And it's a fun cube. These niche cubes are like great palate cleansers. We've always kind of used that term for what they're best used for is, everyone has drafted a normal cube,
mm-hmm.
or most people have.
Yeah.
And when you get kind of your fill of that, it's nice to draft one of these different cubes to clean your palate and have a totally different experience with completely new cards, that wouldn't see play in any other cube.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back to the normal cubing, and it's a nice balance. But anyway.
Yeah, something that we did, I recently moved, and where I moved from, most of my cube group actually lives fairly close by. And I was honestly a little bit worried that they weren't going to, because we run it at my house. I was a little bit worried that they weren't going to come to my new place when I moved. And they assured me that that wasn't the case. And so we made a big thing around sort of changing it up in the last few weeks leading up to me moving, because I wasn't going to be able to run it for a few weeks. So I actually changed my cube. I took 200 cards out of it and powered it. And that was actually quite a bit of fun. I still generally dislike powered cubes, but we had a lot of fun playing them and, sort of tuning the list. I think we did it four weeks in a row. So I was kind of tuning the list as I went and adding cards, and it was cool, but it was definitely a good palate cleanser. I definitely suggest to anybody who hasn't powered or depowered your cube to try one or the other, because I think you'll get a new idea on what cards are good and what cards aren't. It does change your perception on certain cards. Like, I had a lot of the bounce lands totally out of my list, but I modeled my list after the Magic Online list, the power list, and which has, I think, all 10 of them in. So I just put all 10 of them in Fast Bond, and I really liked playing with them again because it had been so long since I played with them, and so that kind of gave me a new perspective, and so I decided to add a few more back into my main list. So,
cool.
Yeah, but Gen Con, there was, it seemed to me this year that it was a little bit more quiet. I don't know why that is. Do you think that that's a true statement? It just seemed like, sure, there was a lot of people, but it seemed quiet.
Yeah, 2012 had the World Magic Cup at Gen Con, so there was a much larger WotC presence. Wizards didn't even have a booth at this event, or they may have had like a small one for D&D.
Mm-hmm.
They really didn't have a huge Magic presence. And that's something that I kind of tweeted out at some of the WotC folk on Twitter, is that, next year I'd really like to see a bigger WotC presence, especially with the 20th anniversary going on this year. It just didn't feel, right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it was definitely quieter. There were people playing and there was lots of Magic tournaments going on, but it didn't feel the same.
Yeah. Yeah, that was that also brings in sort of that international presence. So I remember seeing a lot of people from outside of the country last year.
Right.
Didn't really get to see a lot of that. And I know that they got rid of the Vintage and Legacy World Championship Series. They're going to run them in Philly or Pittsburgh or something next November. I don't think it really put a dampener in what we are trying to do, which is just eat food in Cube pretty much all weekend. And so we got to play, you know, we got to play your list. I have my combo cube. So we, you know, obviously ran that out as whenever we had people that wanted to play it. But there are a couple cubes that, one I got to play, one I wish that I had time to play that I want to talk about. The first one is the 1994 cube by Andrew Cite. So, and sorry, Andrew, if I'm getting your name wrong here. So this,
I think it's City.
City. Okay. Yep. Andrew City. So his cube, and I'll have a link in the show notes if you want to see one of the most beautiful cubes that I've ever seen, is it's from Alpha through not Fallen Empires.
Fallen Empires.
Yeah. So 1994 and earlier, so that hits Arabian Nights, Antiquities, Legends. You know, it gets The Dark and Alphabet Unlimited. And so very, very interesting cube. And I didn't get to draft it, but I watched the decks, or I got to see some of the decks, and I got to talk with Andrew kind of in-depth on some more fringe card choices. But you actually got to play it.
You missed out, man. It was awesome.
So tell me what it was like when you picked up like the first pack. Like, what was the card that stood out to you, and you're like, I'm building around this?
Well, the crazy thing about it is it's fully powered,
mm-hmm.
but then it has other cards in it that just like, it's like, wow, this card's bad. Like, it has Holy Light is in the cube.
Yeah.
So you have Black Lotus and Holy Light.
Right.
I wasn't shocked by any card inclusion. I think what impressed me the most is just the look of the cube.
Mm.
You know, everything's old border. He has all the original versions of the cards. The things that are super expensive, I think he got collector's edition versions.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he still has, you know, Juzam Jinns and Library of Alexandria and, you know, all of that. But I tried to draft, like, blue-white because blue-white has traditionally always been, like, a powerful archetype in any sort of draft format.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if you take... It really felt like powered core set draft. Like
nice.
Like a supercharged core set draft.
Mm-hmm.
And so traditionally, blue-white is good in those formats. So my deck turned out pretty good. I had cards like Sarah Angel and I can't remember, like Serendib Efreet, you know. So I had like, you know, some big, powerful flyers.
Mm-hmm.
It was really fun. It was just like nostalgic. And again, there's those cards that would never see play in any other cube, which mm-hmm. is always fun. There's lots of like reading cards that you completely forgot what they did.
It's a lot of text.
Lots of text. So it was just a blast. It was like super, super fun. Everybody's kind of like, you know, laughing and smiling while they're playing it because it's a feel good cube.
Yeah. And people are walking over like, what are you doing? You have, you know, Unstable Mutation on a Progital Sorcerer and you have a Mox Jet in play. What the heck format are you playing?
Right. Like, what was the play of the weekend, I think, was a Suchi got powered out by a Mishra's Workshop on turn two and got Forespiked.
Oh, God. So, okay, this was something that when we were talking about the list, he does not play old 1994 rules. First of all, no one knows them.
Right.
But, you know, it definitely makes cards like Suchi feel a little bit better, and even like Apprentice Wizard and some of the other cards that add mana, you know, get a little bit better. But the thing that was really interesting that we were going back and forth on is, you know, we would talk about random obscure cards, and he was always just like, yeah, it's in there. Yeah, it's in there, you know. It's just like there's so much to take in. Like you said, it's so different. And you should just browse through the pictures if you can. But unlike, I think, you know, the cube theory that we talk about traditionally in this show, this one is a lot more constrained on what you can do with it because you literally are never adding another card to the card pool. So the only way that this cube could evolve is if you said, well, then let's just go up to 95 and let's put Ice Age in there, or let's put, you know, whatever the next set is. Otherwise, you know, a breeding pool is always going to be, or I'm sorry, a breeding pit or pestilence are always going to be what they are. There's never going to be some interaction that you don't know about unless a rule changes or something. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be at, you know, at one, it's got to be like a really nice cube to play, but I wonder, you know, how Andrew maybe keeps it fresh, you know, or if maybe he runs another list, or there's like maybe a specific variant format that you play to kind of keep it fresh. But
yeah, I mean, I think it'll stay fresh for a really long time. And even if it doesn't, it is another, you know, good palate cleanser for cubing in general.
Mm-hmm.
But just after one draft, I really feel compelled to draft it a couple more times and really figure out what the good archetypes are.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot you can do. Like one of our mutual friends, Mike Augustine, he always drafts combo in cube. Doesn't matter if it's a combo cube or not. He just wants to draft like weird interaction decks.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think like, well, what's the combo in this cube besides like Channel Fireball? And he didn't have Channel Fireball. So he built this like 4-color deck that wanted to play Gauntlet of Might and Mana Flare to just produce a crazy ton of mana. He had Fast Bond in his deck too. And he had one Fireball in his deck. And so the idea was to just make a crazy amount of mana, somehow find this Fireball, which he had like Ancestral Recall to like draw through. And it just did like these crazy things. And we actually, our match came down to the third game in which his last two cards were the Fireball he needed, and I got to power sink it after he Fireballed for 20 with like 11 with like 11 up for power sink. But I think like his Mana Flare made me able to like power sink for 14 or something. So, it was just a crazy, crazy match.
Nice.
But yeah, like, you know, there's like things like that where like weird archetypes that may not be discovered except by people like Mike. So yeah.
Yeah, and we talked a lot about white decks, and you would think, you know, white has a good presence of sort of guys in the low end, but he kind of told me that they basically stop after you hit, you know, you have Order of Leaper and White Knight and Savannah Lions, and then like that's pretty much it. You know, you have Sarah Angel sort of at the top end, but white has trouble sort of doing things outside of the control role on this cube, and so that's a very interesting, it's a very interesting sort of design problem to have, because maybe there's a possibility where you could look into legends in the multicolor side where there's some weird, you know, fringe legends and find a way to make the fixing better. So like right now he has two of each dual land. So maybe instead you do four of each dual land or something and increase the size of the cube, just as an example of a way that you might be able to change it up. But anyway, I thought that the list was beautiful. Everybody who drafted it said it was awesome. So big props to Andrew for, you know, sort of trailblazing that format. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Everybody who didn't get to draft it, but saw it being drafted, immediately wanted to draft it. It's like, you know, and you don't always see that with cube, but you know, but yeah, just anyone passing by was like, oh my God, I want to play with this. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something that sort of draws you in when you see all those cards. In fact, I was just shuffling the cube, mm-hmm. And like looking through it, and there was a table across the way, and they're like, "Whoa, man, what, you know, what is that?" And I almost felt like uncomfortable holding it, and I'm like, "No, they're all collector's edition." Like these are not, you know, because I'd like thumbed over a Lotus and a Mox while I was going through it. So obviously, you know, I don't have like a $40,000 cube in my hands. I don't want someone to jump across the table.
Yep.
But yeah, so that list is awesome. Let's talk about one more cool list that we played at Gen Con and sort of my first foray into an actual custom cube because I've always sort of pushed against it. But Dave McDarby, better known as Jace, if you follow any of the Star City stuff, he called it the GameCube, or you nicknamed it the GameCube. And this is basically a custom cube that he came up with that includes all the games, like video console games, throughout video game history from Nintendo up to PlayStation 3. And he sort of created this world and these mechanics. And so we got to sit down to it. Did we do an 8-man? I think we did an 8-man.
We did an 8-man, yeah.
And it was just awesome. You know, we opened the... It was his very, very, very first draft. So he had just finished the design and printed them. We were sitting at the table and he said, "Oh, I have this custom list if you want to play it." And we're like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" So it had never been drafted before. So we drafted it and I had a total blast. So I'll let you maybe tell your side of it.
Yeah, I thought the cube was cool. I think... I'll preface it by saying, like, one of my only issues with it was I'm not a huge console guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I didn't get a lot of the references. But, like, a lot of the people who are big hardcore video gamers really enjoyed, you know, looking at every single card and kind of having that spark where they put two and two together. Mm-hmm. But, like, I've played a couple games, and the references I did get were awesome. I always enjoy playing custom cubes because the cards are 100% new to me. I've played Justin Parnell and Ali Andrazi's custom cube, which they've worked a ton on. But anyway, the most interesting thing about McDarby's cube for me were a lot of the mechanics that were going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like he has a huge legendary presence. Like I'd say like at least half the creatures are legendary.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting. Kamigawa block kind of explored having a ton of legendary creatures in a limited set.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's not something that's really been showcased in Magic in general.
Mechanically
speaking, at least. So that's cool. And then there was like a huge equipment theme going on too. There's like, I think he said like 30 equipment in like a 360 cube.
Right.
So like, wow. Yeah. That was really interesting too.
Yes.
Yeah. I had some fun.
Yeah. So I want to talk, he had a couple other mechanics. He had Pokemon.
Oh, right. Pokemon.
And I never, I just missed the Pokemon generation by like maybe a year or two. So I never got into the card game. I never played the Game Boy games. I never watched the show. It was just totally through osmosis did I absorb any sort of information about Pokemon. I never saw it. So, but he had a cycle of creatures that leveled up. So I guess if you have a a Charizard or whatever, he's like a level above some other creature, right? So they go level 1, 2, 3. So you had a guy that you could play and you could sacrifice it to get the next level of card.
Right.
So you actually had to draft that other card. So it was kind of interesting. And we did talk a little bit about, you know, you didn't want to make like a guy that was so bad on its own that you would never draft it. So we kind of were like tweaking the numbers a little bit. So that was like, I thought a really interesting part of drafting this list, especially that he hadn't tuned it, was just finding interactions that were like, "Wow, man, yeah, you have an infinite loop on this card," or,
yeah,
you know, the wording is a little strange in this one. It should probably just say opponents and not any player. And, but you know, beyond those, which are totally excusable, I think, you know, flavor wise, it was a lot of fun, a lot more fun than I thought I'd have playing a custom cube.
Yeah, the Pokemon were extremely powerful.
Yeah,
like I only had. I had the Charmander Charmeleon, which is like level 1, level 2,
mm-hmm.
if you're not familiar with Pokemon. And like I still played them even though I didn't have the level 3. Because the way they functioned were, I think all the level 1s were 1-drops.
Mm-hmm.
And you could sacrifice them immediately to get the level 2s,
mm-hmm.
which were like... They were like 3 to 4 drops in power level, so it was like having a 3 to 4 drop on turn 1, and also they had like insane come to play effects.
Too. Yeah, yeah. I think,
like the level two was like a flame tongue copy or something. It's like.
Yeah.
Turn one guy, go. Oh, you played a guy. All right. Flames on Kavu on my end step. yeah. And then, like, the level threes were, like, crazy bombs. So, actually, if you did get all three pieces, you could go, like, turn one crazy bomb.
Right. And I think he since fixed it, like, by adding a cost in addition to just sacrificing them, like, maybe paying their mana cost or something. Yeah, that I got beaten pretty bad by one of those on turn one. It was, I think it's like a mini Woodfall Primus, and I just like, oh, I can't win. Yeah.
I'm not like criticizing David in any way. Like I thought it was a cool idea and it was fun. So I mean, he's obviously still doing a ton of tuning.
Yeah, so I saw him the next day and he had a Sharpie out and he had like all these cards unsleeved in front of him, and he was like adjusting mana costs and things. And I think this is like a really fun thing to do. I think even just at an intellectual level, to just talk about card design in that way. So, you know, we would talk, Prozac, obviously, you know, him going to Wizards, he really understands design, and sort of what a card needs to look like to be playable. And so he was giving some really good feedback, and I was like, you know, kind of trying to tag along to that. So he made some adjustments, and I actually, when later that day, I had thought about a card that I wanted him to add to the cube, because it's my favorite game is Chrono Trigger, and I wanted him to put a copy of a card called Gato, if you've ever played it. And so I kind of explained the design to him, and he's like, oh yeah, that's cool, whatever. So I don't know if he ended up putting it in, but on my drive home, I started thinking, I'm like, you know, all right, so if I designed a cube, what would my mechanics look like? What would my, you know, ideal environment be? And I actually got so pumped up thinking about it that I started putting one together. And I'm not like, you know, deep into developing it or anything, but for those of you who know me, I've been playing, I am a huge console guy, like almost that's all I do. I don't even play the new games. I just play the old Super Nintendo and Nintendo games. So rather than like, you know, create some world that I didn't want to do, I just texted. I'm like, dude, would you kill me if I just made like a Super Nintendo themed cube? So, and he's like, no, man, that's cool. Like, I'm flattered, whatever. So I started, you know, that made it easier for me to design the cards. So I kind of was making them and you know, messing with casting costs. And I figured out what my design criteria was, which is basically, if it's not good enough that I wouldn't put it in my cube, it's not, I wouldn't design it that way. If it's too good, then I need to adjust the cost or the ability. And that was sort of my main design criteria. So I'm working through it. If I get it done, you know, sometime in the next year or whatever, I might post it somewhere, but, it's just a nice thought exercise, I think.
Yeah. I'm already interested in drafting this cube. You've sold me.
Yes. So, and I got my group involved. So a couple of my guys, I showed them a few of the cards that I'd drawn up in my mechanics. And they, you know, we're getting really pumped up because they were really into the Super Nintendo games, and you know, so they see a Donkey Kong card called Harvest Bananas. Just like, oh man, I wanna play this. So I like getting exposed to formats that I think that I don't like and then end up liking them. you know, that same thing happened with powered cubes. You know, for so long I just said powered cubes are awful and I didn't like them, you know, early on into my cubing days. And, you know, over the last few years, I really grown to appreciate them. And I appreciate these special cubes more than I think maybe even regular lists sometimes, just because the thought that goes into them and the care that goes into them. You're not just pulling a list down from somewhere. You're spending hours and hours fine tuning and making an environment. And I really appreciate that hard work.
That's awesome.
So, but yeah, so any other fun things from Gen Con that you want to talk about before we move on to some mailbag stuff?
Yeah, let me talk real quick about the annual rotisserie draft.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I missed this. I was not pleased.
So in 2012 at Gen Con, I wanted to do a rotisserie draft, which, if you're not familiar, it's when you lay out the entire cube, and it's completely sorted. And then you go around the table, you know, everyone seated like they are in a normal draft, and you draft the cube face up. So it's extremely fun. The difference is, you know, you can really craft your deck from the very beginning because the cube picks are all face up. You get to see what everyone else is drafting, so you can kind of either try to fight someone or stay out of their way. Really incredibly fun format. One of my, it's my favorite cube format. The reason I don't get to do it all that often is because it does take a little bit more time than a normal cube draft. Because you have to sort the cube, you have to lay it all out, and then everyone is kind of hemming and hawing about each of their picks. So it takes about a little bit over an hour to do the draft, and then you know, then you just play as normal. So this year it was the second annual Cube Rotisserie draft, and it was with my common uncommon cube. We did it on Thursday, the first day of the convention, and it was awesome. So, yeah, let's see. What else do I want to say about that? One thing I will say is if you're going to do a rotisserie draft, I would suggest playing for something. Because it's a big time commitment, some people can kind of waver towards the middle of it. You know, mm-hmm. They're like, oh, I've been here for an hour and a half. This is fun, but I kind of want to go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
But playing for something really keeps people invested. It makes the matches a little bit more competitive. So I think, you know, we played for $5 ahead, and it just made everything all the better.
Yeah.
And the other interesting thing about it is that assuming that you draft perfectly. I mean, you could draft perfectly. You could have the perfect deck, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like your deck is not at the whim of, you know, whatever cards you open. You have access to every single card in the cube. And assuming those cards don't get picked, you could have, you know, the best deck ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was super fun. I ended up winning the draft, which obviously made it more fun. we played, instead of playing like a standard 8-man bracket, we played 3 Swiss rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was awesome.
Yeah, that sounds insane. Yeah, definitely sad to have missed it. But I agree, roasting takes a huge time commitment. I like the idea of adding something to it. Usually a cake will be fine, or a couple packs or something.
Cake drafts.
Yeah. There's some pretty good confection places around Gen Con too, so...
Definitely. And we had a really interesting discussion about the first 8 picks of the draft afterwards, kind of like what are the best 8 cards in the cube, and just, you know, and some of those sort of fluctuate based on what you see, like the first 3 or 4 people draft, obviously, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, you want to move on to mailbag?
Yeah, let's do it. So I got a few questions here. The first one's from, these are all from Twitter, and you can hit me up on at Joy of Cubing if you ever want to send a topic in. So this one was actually from the last episode, and it says, will Theros, this is from at ZACLW, will Theros bring more playable Hydras, and talk about Colonian and Battle Driver? Says that those are two of his new favorite additions. So that's kind of an interesting question. The reason that I think this is a good question is that, you know, I think anytime like a tribal mechanic comes in, you know, you might have like some implications, but like Hydras are largely like, they just don't have any sort of tribal implications, but they've put a lot of them in the Theros block just because I think like the whole Greek mythology, you have like, you know, is Cerberus, would that be considered a Hydra? Or
Cerberus is a three-headed dog.
But you have, you know, they put a few in Return of Ravnica block, and then now we've seen a couple in Theros, or not M14, sorry. So yeah, I think we'll see them more, and I'm actually wanted to comment on this one specifically because Colonian Hydra, which I kind of ho-hummed a little bit about when I had Justin Parnell on the last episode and said I hadn't had much testing with it, and I've totally changed my mind about this card, having killed a number of people with it. So I just wanted to put my stamp of approval on that card and say that if there are any more Hydras that are close to Colonian Hydra, then I will add all of them.
I mean, the one that has spoiled for Theros looks at least decent. The Polychronos World Eater.
Yeah, so that, is that the 4-drop?
Yeah, it's 2 green-green for a 5-5, and then it has XX green Monstrosity X.
Mm-hmm.
And that says, if this creature isn't monstrous, put X 1-1 counters on it, and it becomes monstrous. And then when it becomes monstrous, it deals X damage divided as you choose among any number target of any number of target creatures your opponents control. And then each of those creatures deal damage back to the Hydra. So, I mean, a green source of direct damage is obviously few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, already being 4 mana for a 5-5, which I understand isn't like the most impressive stats on creatures these days, which is absurd.
Right, right.
I mean, I think that card could be cubable for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's for me, I don't know how much I'm pushing a lot of big green strategies lately, but you know, if you have a couple wake effects or Heartbeating Spring or whatever, and you can make this thing do a ton of damage, it could end the game just by itself. But yeah, Usman actually has been saying that this card's really good, so I'll let him test it for me, because I don't know, something about green cards, maybe I'm just like really disillusioned by what green does, but I just think green is so boring, and even like when you get an interesting card like this, I'm just, I don't know, what is it that we get a 4-mana 5-5 and we're just like, yeah, that's not good enough, whatever.
Yeah, bro, like, do you remember Rumbling Slump?
Yeah, or like, I remember playing Aeronym Djinn, and like, that guy was just, nothing killed it, nothing. And right. Nobody played Terror, why would anybody play that card? So
I mean, Rumbling Slump had a drawback. And it wasn't that long ago, you know?
Yeah, people played freaking Jade Leech, for crying out loud, man. That card,
God.
It made your spells cost one more. You Winter or Sphere of Resistance yourself just so that you can have a 5-5 for 4.
Yep.
Man, we're so spoiled.
So spoiled. And also old men.
So the next one comes from Joel Smith. He's at SweetToothTKC. He said, when building a cube, do you start by including known archetypes or individual cards first? What are the advantages to both? So I actually start totally differently. I start with the frame first. So I look at like the largely how big is the cube first. That's the easiest question to ask. Answer. And then, you know, how am I going to fill the colors out? So is it going to be a lot of lands? Is it going to be a lot of multicolor artifacts? And sort of get that framework together first. In fact, that's how I'm designing the custom cube, is I'm just, you know, I want this many 1-drops, I want this many 2-drops, and I go to each color and I define that based on lists that I have, based on other lists, and try to hone that in. Then I think once you know kind of what that's going to look like, I would go by archetypes rather than individual cards. Because if you said, I want to support Reanimator, then you can go look at the cards. Rather than say, I want to put Reanimator in here, how am I going to build around it?
Okay.
So that's my perspective. I don't know. Do you have a... You kind of...
I'm a little bit different. I do obviously start with a framework where I figure out how big the cube is going to be and what sort of color distribution, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
But then I do. I just start throwing in like the cards I want to add,
mm-hmm.
and the cards I like. And I think you start to discover what archetypes are going to be successful more through drafting.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm drafting the cube and I see an archetype that I like, but I want to support it more, then I start fine-tuning, taking out cards that don't support that archetype and adding cards that do. So, I mean, that's like something that happened with the zombie cube, is I just kind of threw in the cards that I wanted, and then I saw what archetypes were successful and weren't.
Mm-hmm. So I suppose one's kind of like, you know, like a snowball, and the other one's like carving an ice sculpture. So they're both sort of getting to the same.
Yeah, and I don't think either way is right or wrong. I think it's, you know, whatever you feel comfortable with, and yeah.
So hopefully that answers your question there. Let's go on to the next question. This one's from @worldlytutor. Very nice Twitter handle there. He wants us to touch on cube storage. He has a few things: cube storage, basic land count, and on deck binder. So first of all, I think you and I did the on deck binder episode forever ago. There's a episode called On Deck. It's one of the first ones in the list. You could check it on the blog. I don't think it's up at Gathering Magic. Joycubing.blogspot.com. I think it's still up there. But let's talk about cube storage and land count, because these are like, I kind of get these questions more than I thought I did, you know, going through my feed here. So first of all, for storage, if I have a cube that I'm taking out to a PTQ or an event, I just put it in a 1,000 count box, or, you know, something that can hold the entirety of my cube in the land. So I don't do anything fancy there. Do you, how about you for your zombie cube or your,
I'm a big fan of long boxes, just the normal cardboard long boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing about cube storage is you have to remember that if you're going to an event with this cube, you're going to be lugging it around all day.
Yes.
So you want something that is going to be both, you know, it's going to protect your cards, but at the same time, it's going to be comfortable to carry around. So a lot of people, I'll give a shout out to Jason Murray, who just started this Cube Vault project. So if you don't know what the Cube Vault project is, Google it. It's on Kickstarter. It's called the Cube Vault. It's a metal carrying case specifically designed for cubes, or transporting card games, basically.
Right.
So, like, as much as I like his project, and I really do, Jason, don't hate me for criticizing your project. But that's an extra, like, 5 pounds, because it's a metal carrying case. And that's like and 5 pounds may not sound like a lot, but that's extra weight you got to be carrying around all day.
Yeah.
So I'm a fan of the cardboard long boxes, mostly just because they're a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
So some people like the metal carrying cases because they do protect your cards better.
Mm-hmm.
And they have like handles built into them, so you don't have to stash them in your bag necessarily. So that's cool.
You can handcuff them to your wrist if you wanted to.
Yeah. But I would say basically when you're looking in for cube storage, think about how comfortable it is to lug that thing around.
Yeah. That's my wife made me, or she commissioned a custom box for my main cube, and it's beautiful. It's like, I don't know, oak or something, and it's got a carving of a cube on the front of it. It's velvet lined and it's beautiful, but it does weigh a little bit. So it's nice. I kind of keep it down where we draft, and we store the cube in there, but I don't usually take it out because it weighs a ton.
Right.
Cool. So basic land count's kind of an interesting one. This one is totally going to depend on how many people draft your list. Mm-hmm. If you only have, you know, 3 or 4 drafters, you probably get away with probably just having, what, 20, 25 land. And that would be, like, on the very, very high end. I think if you go up to 8, like, in some cases, I've had up to 14 people draft my cube. I have 40 to 45 of each basic land.
Yeah, I mean, I would say just, like, definitely think about how many people are going to be drafting your cube. And then just kind of estimate, you know, how many people are going to be drafting a certain color, how many lands are they going to need of that color, and then just sort of parse it out from there.
Yeah.
So like with my common uncommon cube, I have 30 of each basic, because I don't really see more than 3 people drafting a certain color in an 8-man.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, realistically, are they going to need 10 each of that land? You know, because most mana bases are going to be somewhere around 10-7. So if your main color is red and there's 3 people drafting red, am I going to need more than 30 lands? Probably not.
Yeah.
But then
my zombie cube on the flip side,
yeah,
it's like completely color imbalanced. So I'm running 60 of each white and black, and then only 20 of the remaining basics.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I think I run. I think I do plus 5 or 10 blue and black. I just found that when I had the same amount throughout, I always ran out of swamps and islands. So
sure, yeah. I could see that. I could totally see adding more islands to my common uncommon cube.
Yeah, and that, and I don't think that that's like a saying what people are drafting more than not. I just think, I don't know, maybe my fixing wasn't as good in those colors, or you just tended to run less non-basics. I don't know, because I was trying to trend out like whether I just had too many, like people were just like too into playing blue, mm-hmm. or like too into playing the value decks, but most of those decks just run five color lands anyway. So, but this kind of goes along with the next question that we got, which is the last one that I want to go over today. It's kind of an interesting topic. This one's from Les Kershaw at Who Is Les on Twitter. He asks about how about ways of battling blue in your cube. Second topic: trying to make a powered cube semi-even. Do you have? I'll let you kick it off here.
Yeah, I mean this is sort of my mantra when it comes to cube drafting. Is I'm a big aggro advocate, and the reason this is because a lot of newer players, or just people who don't have a lot of experience drafting in general, don't necessarily understand that tempo is card advantage. I mean, yes, your Jackal Pup is not drawing you cards, but if you kill them before they can play their two for ones or their card advantage spells, you know, then the tempo was pseudo card advantage.
Sure, sure.
And this is something I went over with one of my fellow drafters that drafts with us each week. A couple weeks ago, I told him that, and because he was kind of frustrated that there was like so many two for ones, and his deck didn't have two for ones, and I was like, "You got to utilize the fact that your deck is a little faster than everyone else."
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely one way you can battle blue in cube is just be faster than them, because blue is naturally going to really come online turns 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
So just be faster than them. If you still find that they're more powerful, you can try to slow their deck down. Maybe there's too many mana rocks that are kind of accelerating them a turn.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, maybe you're just drafting too many mid-range decks that are somewhere in between aggro and control. So your cards are not more powerful than the blue deck, but not fast enough to beat them either.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, that's real basic limited 101, but I think it's something to keep in mind when you're both drafting and designing a cube.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with everything you said. You know, trying to find an angle depending on what list you're playing. You know, not allowing cards like Wasteland and, you know, that are very, can cripple the control decks, or, you know, a Smash to Smithereens, and, you know, not letting those cards go by you in the draft, and instead of, you know, taking maybe a more flashy or shiny card, like an equipment or something, especially in rare cubes, I find that tends to make the decks much more cohesive. But from a design perspective, I think, you know, obviously you can do things like you said, you know, limit the number of artifact mana that you have, because that definitely gives control a big edge. You know, you can put, if blue is like just absolutely driving you crazy and that's all anybody drafts, then put Loxodon Smiter and Red Elemental Blast. I mean, you know, you can disincentivize people from playing blue, you know, in much less obvious ways. I think maybe, you know, cards like Sulfuric Vortex and whatnot, you know, I think really give a problem to those kinds of decks. But yeah, you could just put in just color hosers. What's that one that's, I think it's like Sirocco or something. I think it's red, and then it, like the player reveals their hand, for every blue card they have, they take 4 damage or something. And it's something ridiculous like that. But yeah, so, but the powered comment about making it even, I'm assuming you mean like sort of offsetting the variance of having these really powerful cards. The answer to that one is, I think, pretty pretty easy. I think if you make the cube smaller, mm-hmm. and give people a better opportunity to get those cards, you reduce the variance that you have in the draft, in the play part of the draft. So when I powered my cube up, my cube's like a little over 600 cards. I cut it down to 400 cards to make it powered.
Nice.
So that would be, I would say, the easiest way to make it even. I mean, there are obviously cards that, you don't typically see in a lot of regular lists, like Gorilla the Shaman or even, other cards that are very oppressive to those kinds of strategies. Null Rod, I guess, would be another good one. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, other than that, it's just kind of tweaking the numbers and making sure that you just don't have too much degenerate stuff, and I think you're in good shape. So, I don't know if do you have any thoughts on do you ever play Parnell's list, or did he move to Roanoke?
He's in Roanoke now. Yeah, I played Parnell's list a bit, and yeah, I mean, I found like forcing the aggro strategies work just fine at beating a lot of the more powerful blue decks.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, Ancient Grudge, that card.
Ancient Grudge is very good.
Every time I draft that card when they did the Holiday Moto Cube, my deck was just unbeatable.
Well, and you mentioned Smash to Smithereens, which is also a nice one.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, hopefully that answered your question. Norbert 88 was asking for us to cover the zombie cube, which we obviously went in detail on, but hopefully I got to everybody that had sent us questions. We appreciate you sending those in. So that kind of covers the mailbag part. Did you have any other thoughts? I mean, I'm sure you probably get people asking you questions all the time. Any comments from your article or anything that you want to get into?
I mean, yeah, Norbert's been pestering me on Twitter, asking me all these questions about Zombie Cube. I hope we covered some. Don't let my comment discourage you. Keep pestering me about the cube. I appreciate it. I'm glad that you like it. No, I mean, I think we covered a lot of it. I wish I had cubed more at Gen Con, even though I cubed a ton. I hope I cube even more next year. And I mean, I hope I get to see more people building cubes and newer cubes and new cube ideas and formats. And there's a reason that this podcast exists, and that's because cubing's awesome.
That's a true statement. So why not? What are you doing these days? So you got that article up at Gathering Magic. What about you? Still altering?
I'm still painting the cards. That's the day job. If you want some cards altered, can always contact me. Look up Klug Alters on Facebook or follow me on Twitter, Klug, KLUG _ Alters. But yeah, I mean, I think most people know that.
Yeah, most people listening to this show, especially those who go to Gathering Magic or on Twitter. Yeah, so definitely reach out to Eric if you want any alters. You can follow me. I'm at KStube. For my personal Twitter, you can follow the show at Joy of Cubing. Definitely check out the articles in Gathering Magic. The staff over there is really putting out some great stuff lately. And, it's my first place that I go to check out articles. Until next time, Joy of Cubing. Thanks for joining me, Eric.